and your family's gonna judge you. You just have to be as real with yourself as possible. And that is a very difficult struggle, but when you're not, you create enormous vulnerability and unhappiness.
All right, appreciate the intro there, Lisa. We are gonna start a new series today, and of course, it's a nice, beautiful day in January 2018, and we're excited about the year. I wanna first say that I'm thankful to Pastor Tony last week, who covered for me pretty short notice on Saturday as we took my temperature, and it was over 101. I kind of knew that I may not make it Sunday morning for the last Sunday of 2017. And my wife texted Tony and clued him in, and I understand he did a wonderful job. I woke up Sunday morning feeling just like I did Saturday. About 7 days in a row, I didn't even leave the house, and I know a number of folks have the same thing, and if folks have the flu bug, we're glad that they stayed home today. And in fact, I want to make sure we know this, is our website is back up, revamped, and so our sermons, our Sunday talks are back online. And so if you miss a week or whatever the series we're going to do, you can listen to it online. But I do appreciate Pastor Tony stepping in and everybody kind of helping out when I wasn't feeling too good. So, but welcome to the first service of 2018 at Cornerstone. And we're going to have a great year. 2017 is in the books. We had ups and downs. We have challenges. Folks in our church went through medical difficulties and things, but we're encouraged about the new year. So, you know, over the last few days being home, you get kind of bored. I watched every rerun of MASH I could, and so I'm pretty well mashed out, although I can't believe me saying that, okay? But I also started playing with new apps on my phone. I uploaded the Uber app. I think it's important to have that. And then I saw that one of our folks here, Jolene, has the app to track airplanes. And so my wife thinks it's kind of humorous as I stood up last night and I said, here comes an Uber car right by our house right now. And I'm tracking these things. And when I see an airplane outside, I try to figure out where it's going, where it's coming from. And it's amazing. I think my dog thinks I'm going crazy because I'm standing by the back door looking up at airplanes saying, okay, that's a flight. That's FedEx. They fly no matter what, apparently. And so I need to get a life, okay? And so, but it's kind of fun to track those planes and everything, find out how fast they're going. And then, of course, as they come in for a landing, all of a sudden it goes to 900 feet, 800 feet, 7. And then you get to the last 200 feet, and it just trickles down to zero. And I always keep waiting for them to go beyond zero, negative, just to see what would happen, you know? So, but yeah, so I definitely had a lot of time on my hands, not feeling well the last couple weeks. And if you're listening to this on our web or whatever, if you're homesick this first Sunday of New Year's, we hope you get better. We're going to begin a new series today, and we entitled the series Motivated to Succeed, Gift, Talents, and Abilities. And let me kind of, before I get into the outline, I have a lot of, one thing I want to mention, that this series is going to have a lot of information. I warn our crew that normally I speak about 30 minutes and may go a little over because there's so much I want to give you. Because this topic is probably one of the most important topic when it comes to the Christian life, is understanding how we're made up, how we're gifted by God, and how we view other people, too. Because this has a lot to do with how we fellowship with other people, how we understand other people, and many times how we get along with other people based upon their gift makeup. Because there are gifts that we have that sometimes are contradictory, or not to say contradictory, but they contrast with other people. For instance, if you have the gift of prophecy, which we're going to explain, and you are associated with somebody with the gift of mercy, because your two gifts are somewhat in contrast, that sometimes you won't see eye to eye on things. And if you understand that, it makes you accept people a lot more and more understanding to who they are, knowing that everybody's exactly like you or like me. And so we're going to discuss that. And each week, next week, we're going to kick off with the first of the spiritual gifts and the gift of prophecy. And each gift that we're going to talk about will have a character in the Bible that identifies with that gift. And you're going to see how that character, maybe if you have this similar gift, you somewhat associate yourself with the way they think and talk and the way they conducted themselves in New Testament or Old Testament Scripture. Next week, the Apostle Peter will be our example for the gift of prophecy. As we go through this, we're going to have, for instance, like in the giving, gift of giving will be Matthew, who wrote the book of Matthew, which the book of Matthew has more information about giving and financial success and freedoms and those things there. We're going to get into the gift of exhortation or encouragement, the Apostle Paul. We're going to get into the gift of ruling or organization, which is Nehemiah from the Old Testament. And you're going to see how these folks with their dominant gift did the things that they did, motivated to succeed. And so I hope it's an interesting series for you. I've done this about two or three times in the last 25 years. And I've always felt that this is one area where it helps a church be unified, understand, and grow together. And so it's a vitally important subject matter we're going to take on. Let me first talk about how your gifts differ from your talents and your abilities, okay? How your gifts differ between your talents and abilities. Talents and abilities are basically things that we have capabilities of doing. You know, if I have the talent and the ability to speak, that's a talent and ability to speak. Some up here obviously have the talents and abilities to sing. Some folks here have talents when it comes to working with their hands and carpentry and things, and although they're trained in that, there's a unique skill set when it comes to doing certain things. I can't imagine, when I see somebody and a group of people build a house, I can't fathom what goes into that, where, yes, they have a blueprint, but the skill they have to be able to make everything fit together and build and be structurally sound and all that, it baffles my mind to be able to see that come together. But some have that ability, and some have that talent, and I, for one, don't. That's why a lot of times we have work around the house. We hire somebody who has that, because I admit the fact that I'm not good at that. And so those are the capabilities that we have, and everybody here has their talents, and everybody here has their abilities. And we all differ. In fact, that's what makes it exciting around a church, is that we have people here that have so many differences when it comes to what they're capable of doing. Some folks are able to work on vehicles. Some folks are able to do so many things. Some can sing. Some can teach. But not everybody can do the same thing. And so that's a talent, and those are abilities. Gifts are different. Gifts are not so much your capabilities. Gifts are that spiritual thing that happens to us when we receive Christ that gives us our motivation. In fact, these are called motivational gifts or grace gifts. When we get saved, God implants in us some dominant gifts that are the underlying reason why we do things. For instance, if you're here today and you have a talent, ability for mechanical stuff and fixing stuff and building stuff, then and you have the gift of service, you're going to have a desire to take that talent, ability, and serve God in capacity with the things that you know how to do. It motivates you. And as we go through these seven different gifts, you're going to see how each gift will help motivate us to carry out our talents and our abilities. I hope I'm explaining this correctly, because I think by the end of the series, I think it'll all come together. But everybody here has a gift, and everybody here has a dominant gift that drives us to do the things we do, that drives us to minister the way that we minister, to carry out our talents and our abilities. Well, these motivational gifts, as we're going to call them, are found basically in the book of Romans, chapter number 12, and we're going to read verses number 3 through 8. And let me kind of set it up. The Apostle Paul is trying to teach the early church about how, like I'm teaching you and coming together to learn, is that how that when we got saved, that there are seven basic gifts that are available to the Christian body. And I do believe we have all these gifts given to us, but there's always one gift that is a dominant gift that drives us to do what we do. And so the Apostle Paul, and he's doing this because there's a lot of division in the Christian body at that time, because they're not all seeing eye to eye. They're not all understanding from the same lens. They're not viewing Christianity from the same thoughts and thought patterns. And what Paul was trying to teach them is that the reason why you don't see things exactly the same, and the reason why you're motivated to do things for a different reason, the reason why you may be critical of this person because they don't seem to have the same motivation, is because you have a dominant gift that's unlike theirs. But when you put it all together in a body, it makes a functional church work so well together. It says here in Romans chapter 12 and verse number 3, "For by the grace given me, I say to every one of you, do not think of yourselves more highly than you ought, but rather think of yourselves with sober judgment in accordance with the faith God has to distribute it to each of you." And just right there, when he says what he's distributed that faith, he's talking about those grace gifts, those faith gifts, which means God has given everybody here equal when it comes to salvation, but he's proportionally given to us certain gifts that we need to exercise. For just as each of us has one body with many members, these members do not all have the same function. So in Christ, we, though many, form one body, and each member belongs to each other. We all have different gifts according to the grace given to each of us. And this is where we get into this whole grace gift, grace gifts. He says, if your gift is prophesying, then prophesy in accordance with your faith. If it's serving, then serve. If it's teaching, then teach. If it's encouraged to encourage, or exhortation as this gift is called in some translation, then encourage, then be of encouragement. If it's giving, then give generously. And if it's to lead, do it diligently. And if it's to show mercy, do it cheerfully. And so here we have these lists of gifts from prophecies to service to giving to organization to exhortation to mercy. And these gifts here are all incorporated in the believers that are functioning in any given church or in the body of Christ as a whole. And everybody here has one of these gifts that's dominant in your life, which is the reason you're driven to do what you do. And over the next 7 weeks, we're going to talk about each gift. Like I said, next week will be prophecy. We're going to outline how Peter has his gift. We're going to examine the attributes and how it looks in someone's life. We're going to talk about how this gift performs when somebody is spiritually directed and how this gift can be somewhat hurtful if it's used in the flesh. And we're going to close out each week with our final walk-away point. And then we're going to carry on each week with service and then on from there. And you're going to identify with these Bible characters, and you're going to see how their gift gives them their viewpoint and their motivation for service. Because you take the Apostle Peter and the Apostle Paul, they actually had clashes. And one of the reasons why they had clashes and confrontations is because of their gift makeup. Where Paul has the gift of exhortation and encouragement, where Peter had the gift of prophecy, and because of those gifts sometimes don't become parallel together, they had some clashes, and they had to learn beyond that how to conduct ministry together at their time and their place. So, 1 Peter 4:10 says this, each one of you should use whatever gift you have received to serve others as faithful stewards of God's grace in various forms. So we're commanded to take these gifts and look at our abilities and talents, but take our gifts and be able to serve God to our strength and to our gifts. You know, I have a certain gift that I'm dominant with, and I'll give it to you. A lot of folks already know, I have the gift of exhortation or encouragement. It can be good in some sense, it can be bad in some sense, but that's what motivates me to do what I do. I'm not motivated, you know, with the gift of with mercy or the gift of prophecy. Although I have those in my system because God gave them to me, I'm motivated by seeing things move forward. I'm passionate about seeing things advance, and I get tremendously discouraged when I see things not enhancing and growing and becoming better and better and people motivated. I have a hard time being around people who don't have passion. When people are just going through the motions and the movements and stuff, sometimes I get frustrated, and like the Apostle Paul, I'm like, okay, just move aside. If you're not going to be passionate about what you're doing, let's let somebody who is passionate, and I'm driven by that, and sometimes I can falsely judge somebody because of the fact I don't see enough passion in their system to carry out the work they're doing. And so you're going to see how that develops as we go forward with this. What hinders knowing our gift? This is going to be kind of a long outline here, and I want to lay some foreground here as we go through the next few weeks. What hinders knowing our gifts? And let me give you three things real quick here. First of all, being spiritually stunted. You're not going to know your spiritual gift if you're not interested in spiritual things, because a gift that we have is spiritual. Talents and abilities are secular. Everybody has talents. Everybody has abilities. These are secular. Those are the things you're capable of doing. Those are things that you have the knowledge of doing, the things you've been trained to do, that you have understanding of. But the spiritual part of it that motivates you, and the reason why some folks don't get involved in ministry and service for God and stuff is because, and they don't know what drives them, is because they're just spiritually not interested in spiritual things. So to me, if you're going to be able to see your gift flourish, you're going to have some interest in things that are spiritual. You're going to have interest in serving the church. You're going to have interest in serving one another. You're going to have interest in actually knowing how God designed your DNA spiritually, so that way you can conduct yourselves in a certain manner. So to me, the first thing is pray and get with God and ask God to give you that spiritual insight. The second one is not involved in ministry. You will never know what you're gifted to do and how you're motivated to do it unless you're doing something. That's why a lot of times in our ministry here we tell folks, not everybody's cut out to serve in every area. You got to find your niche. And the only way you're really going to find your niche and find out what your gift motivates you to do is by testing and seeing what you can do. I think people that are involved in ministry become more aware of how God has designed them and how God has motivated them to serve. So sitting and not doing anything basically is the quickest way of saying, I feel spiritually drained, I don't know why I'm here, I don't know what I'm motivated to do. So to me, you need to test the waters and get involved in ministry somewhere. And it becomes clearer and clearer as you're involved. And the third one is imitating others. One of the things I see happen in churches many times in Christian life is we try to be like somebody else and carry out ministry the way that they would do it. Nothing is more unhappier than a Christian is just trying to imitate somebody else. You will know your spiritual gift is when you begin to stop worrying about imitating somebody else and begin to develop who you truly are. For instance, I have, me and my brother have been in ministry now. He's been 40 years, me 35. We've served, you know, in different places through our ministry. And I used to want to be just like my brother. I wanted to communicate like him. My brother basically is very analytical in his teaching. He's very smart, very educated. He can read. I mean, 1,200 words in a matter, I think, of minutes or whatever. He has this ability to read a book in an evening. Someone like Sarah, she can do the same thing. And I've always been jealous these folks can do this because unless it has pictures, I can't do that. But I used to want to be like him. I used to listen to my brother communicate, and we have similar voices. And so I used to listen to how he, you know, worded things and stuff. But I became so frustrated because I could not match the information he could give in any given time because he carried so much in his head and he was so smart. And I'm not saying I'm not. But I finally said, I'm not going to be like him. I'm going to drive myself my gift. And I decided my speaking is going to be more about motivational than it is informational. And because you will find with me, and even sometimes with Pastor Tony, when Tony speaks, he will give a lot of information, a lot of scriptural backing. In fact, my dad, when he spoke a couple weeks ago, if you noticed, he quoted 30-some scriptures in the matter of 30 minutes. But that's not my gift. I don't have the gift of teaching as I believe that Pastor Tony has that gift. Is I have the gift of exhortation, which means I want to try to get the most motivation done. I want to try to leave people when they're leaving after I speak to have a passionate desire to make a change or do something positive or just feel like they can take on the world. I'm driven by the end result of the motivation and the spirit and the passion I leave somebody with, not just the information I give them. And that's how I am. And so I stopped imitating my brother and started doing things my own way. And when I speak for him at times, he speaks here for me, people can see the difference because we both have similar voices in the way we carry our mannerisms because we both were brothers. But I find myself speaking in a different capacity. Let me give you real quick your keys to the key question to get clarity about your gift. And it comes down to simply this. What motivates you to serve? What is the reason that motivates, not, you know, we're motivated because we're commanded by God to serve, but the reason why we want to do it, the reason why we volunteer to be in the children's ministry, the reason why we volunteer to set up, or the reason why we volunteer to be involved in tech ministry or audiovisual ministry or whatever ministry we're doing, or young people or youth or whatever, those are things that we do, but what motivates us to do those things? So what motivates you? Let me kind of give it to you, like I said a second ago. I'm motivated by seeing change in other people. I'm motivated by seeing somebody get the light bulb comes on and they really get it. I get motivated when somebody contacts me during the week with a question about a scripture because they're analyzing their life and they want to improve. I love seeing folks do better when it comes to their vocations and stuff and improve because they've applied principles of God in their life. But somebody so that's what motivates me to come to church and do what I do each and every Sunday. And there are folks that are motivated by mercy because they really want to see people cared for. There are some folks that are motivated and they do what they do because they want to see people correct the wrongs in their life. They have a strong gift of prophecy. Some folks have the motivational gift of service where they just want to serve. Behind the scenes, they're not looking for recognition. And each gift will show the reasons why we do what we do. We're motivated to do something based upon our gifts. And so the question you probably start with when you're trying to analyze where you're at with your spiritual gift is what truly motivates you? So here's what we're going to do is we're going to try to analyze these gifts by asking some questions and looking at some information about how we view things in our life. So let's get to that. Your viewpoint about others reveals your gift. Now, here's what I want you to get as we introduce this whole subject matter for the next 7 weeks. Right now, I'm going to go through the list of the seven gifts. And I want you to think about people that are close to you as you do this and see what questions you find yourself asking, because this may not prove what your dominant gift is, but this will start giving you the idea of how you actually view other people based upon the eyesight of your gift. See, how you view other people will identify pretty quickly how you are gifted. So your viewpoint of other people will reveal your gift. So let's go for the first one, prophecy. Prophecy. When you're viewing somebody you know, and ask this question in your mind right now, does their character match their words? Do you find yourself being somewhat harsh when somebody doesn't seem to be true to their word? Or when the facts don't align? Or you know that they're just, it's not genuine. You basically view people with the fact of a little bit of discernment, and you look at them with a little scrutiny, and if you see something that doesn't match up, do you find yourselves drawing an opinion of that person? Now, I know we all do, but if you're very strong in prophecy, you're gonna see others basically as black and white. You're going to see information as black and white. You're going to see things as right and wrong, and you may have a low toleration of forgiving somebody based upon the fact of this gift. And the Apostle Peter had this gift. And so the question you ask, does their character match their words? You're going to be the kind of person that basically sees things pretty clear. And if you're in a group setting and somebody has gone through things that they have done wrong or messed up, you may be the one, especially if you're in the flesh, would be the most critical and the one that's going to be the most judgmental at times, because you see things as clear as this is right, this is wrong, and I don't want to have anything to do with those that are not right. The second one, service. Here's a question you may ask. Do they show up consistently? Are they faithful? Do they carry forth and finish the task? If you have the gift of service, you're a person that knows, hey, we're here to do a job and we're here to do a ministry, and I'm there and I'm there early. And when other folks don't have the same energy to it, you may be somewhat disenchanted with them, because you want to see people served. You want to see the church served. You want to see things accomplished. And so your viewpoint of others may reveal this gift, that do they show up consistently? Do they follow through? And you may have a hard time with folks that just don't get the job done. And if you're in a vocation where you're the boss, this may be the person which you say, listen, you're not going to make it here if you can't carry through. The gift of service is very much driven in the sense I'm motivated by making sure that things are followed through and carried out. The third one, teaching. Are they accurate in what they say? Are they accurate in what they say? If you're listening to a biblical teacher and you have the gift of teaching, and all of a sudden they say something that you just know probably isn't accurate, biblically speaking, you may be the first one to say, no, that's not right. I remember years ago when I first started speaking, and once again, the gift of exhortation is I start rambling on and I start being motivating. And someone may come to me and say, listen, you took that scripture out of context to just simply motivate somebody. And they may have a hard time with the fact that was not accurate. Some of the gift of teaching also is when it comes to things of the church and the business of the church and stuff. Maybe a person who basically wants to see things on the paper, the black and white, the numbers and stuff, because they're there for the information. And so as a gift of teaching, you have a tendency to say, is that information accurate? Is what they're saying true and accurate? Is it analytical? Is it precise? In fact, when they're listening to someone speak, there are people that will enjoy listening to Pastor Tony speak more than listen to me speak, because if they have the gift of teaching and Pastor Tony's speaking and he's going to share probably more scriptures and do certain things, they may get more excited because they feel more fed. Somebody who has a gift of exhortation will love my style, because I'm motivated not so much about giving 10 different scriptures, but about taking what I do know and motivating you to do something positive in your life. Teachers are the ones that are more accurate. The next one is exhorter. Do they follow through with passion? This is also the gift of encouragement. The Apostle Paul had this gift. If you remember stories in the Apostle Paul's life, which we'll cover in a few weeks, when John Mark basically didn't want to go with him on that missionary journey, the Apostle Paul, instead of being gracious and showing mercy, said, listen, I'm done with you. You're going to stay back here. If you can't do it with passion, then I'm not taking you with me. Some way to get the exhortation is they want to see people follow through. They want to see people have excitement. And they can't understand how somebody does not have excitement in what they're doing. They're all about the end result of, does this going to make a difference in our lives? And this is the gift that I'm dominant in. And this can be good and bad for me, and I understand this, because this also means that, and I've gone through this in all my years of ministry, that when people are really getting it and on board and excited about doing things for God, I love being around them. But when people basically are kind of just nonchalant, or they seem to waver, or they seem to it's kind of like, listen, either get with the program or get off, man. I mean, either get with us or let somebody else. You know, I get frustrated because, listen, we got something big to do here. So let's get motivated and do it. And so I can be somewhat harsh, and I've had to learn how to be accepting to those who don't see things my way. The gift of giving, do they waste time? Somebody with the gift of giving, they're going to be very conscious of money. They're very conscious of wasting finances. If we are voting here to buy something for the church or do something for the church, they be the one that will be the most scrutinizing of how we're going to do it. Is this the best investment? Is this the best deal that we can get? They're very conscious of value, and they're very conscious of the value of time. And there's a lot of great things about this gift, because there are also those that really help a church move forward financially. But do they waste time? We're looking at Matthew about this gift there. Ruling an organization, are they loyal and do they work the plan? Nehemiah is going to be our example for this one in a few weeks. And this is a gift of leading, the gift of ruling, the gift of organization. They are systematic in a plan. If you study the book of Nehemiah, you will know the first six chapters. He had an organizational plan to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem, and he stuck to that plan. Even when some tried to get him to stop, he stayed with the plan that he had organized. And you may be driven by that. And you may be frustrated being around people in leadership who are not well organized. For instance, I consider myself an organized person, but I don't write stuff down. I go to meetings all the time, and I see people, you know, writing things down. I don't write things down. I figure God will give it to me to remember in my head what I got to do. And I will drive somebody with the gift of organization and ruling nuts, because basically they want everything written down. They want the plan of attack, and they want us to follow through on the plan. With me, I can throw out the plan next week if I don't think it is doing the job it needs to do. But some way to get the organization saying, here's the plan, we're going to carry it out for the next 12 months. That's why in churches, when we start planning out the whole year, I'm going to tell you, we can plan out a calendar, we can plan out a direction, we can have a theme. And in about 30 days, if I don't see it take it hold, I'm ready to scrap it and move on to something that works, because I want to see something accomplished. But some way to get the organization real, and they say, this is the plan, and they want to have it on paper, and they want to make sure we're following the plan that we're going to do. And they're very healthy for the church. But not everybody has that same gift. And then the last one is the gift of mercy. Are they sensitive to others? Are they sensitive to others? So these are people that are motivated by true, true underlying compassion. They sometimes, if somebody is needed in a leadership position, somebody in the gift of prophecy, if a candidate's put forth, the gift of prophecy says they've done too many things wrong in their life, we don't want them in leadership, black and white. Somebody to get the mercy says, you know, maybe they've done so many things bad in their life. They need this encouragement by giving them responsibility. Let's have a little mercy on them and see what we can do by motivating them by mercy. The person with exhortation to say, this person can go in leadership as long as I see some unction and see some passion. Somebody with the gift of teaching, I want to know, you know, can they articulate what they want to do? Somebody to get the ruling and saying, I want to see them write down their goals on paper. And all of a sudden, everybody has a different viewpoint about how this person should be involved in leadership. And that's why there are times there's problems in churches and people don't get along and they don't see eye to eyes, because we don't see everything we do with the same lens. But you put us all together in harmony, and we rely upon each other's gifts, which means my gift should be relied upon in strength, but I need to rely upon somebody else's gift and their strength to build one strong body. And so those are kind of the way you make up and you view points of life and others based upon your gifts. Let me give you a couple more things here. Facts about the unity of gifts in the church. And these are all just introduction, and I hope the next 6 weeks after this, you're going to see some clear ideas about each gift. First of all the gifts work in harmony. So in a church like us, let's take Pastor Tony and myself. We don't have the same spiritual gift. Pastor Tony will tell people in this church all the time that Pastor Stokes is a 30,000-foot view of where our ministry is going. I don't like getting to the weeds. I don't take notes. I don't like lists of things to do. It just drives me crazy if I have to do that. I know in my mind what I got to accomplish. I can visualize where we want things to go and how we want things to go. And Tony has said this for the last almost 20 years, that he has always been, and you may have heard him say it, he's the detail person. He's the person that will get the things done. And in a lot of ways, because I believe his gift is made up in teaching, but also in the area of organization. So to me, is the way the gifts work in harmony is I try not to be like him. I would go crazy. In fact, if you ever got a phone call from Tony or a voicemail, and I say this seriously, he wants to make sure that before he gets to the statement or question, he wants you to have as much information as you possibly can get. Now, sometimes we laugh about that, but that's part of his gift makeup. If you get a voicemail from me, it's like, hey, that's why you let you know. I'm there to encourage you and take care. God bless. And if you think about it, and those that know both of us, you probably can identify what I'm saying. And a lot of it has to do with the gift makeup. And so although we jest sometimes with his voicemails and stuff, he's giving you all the information before he gets to the question. He does it to me. And 99% of the time when I get that, I text him back the answer. Because I'm not a phone talker. I'm not one who spends a lot of time on the phone. And so, but to me, is the reason why Cornerstone has worked so well. And some can say, I wish Pastor Stokes was more like Pastor Tony, and I wish Pastor Tony more like Pastor Greg. And no, you don't. Because if we were both gifted the same way, then we would probably have accomplished less. And the great thing about us is that we've accepted this. He's never once looked at me as Pastor, you need to get more precise, you need to get more organized. He understands that I'm the 30,000-foot person, but I also lean on him and his strength, and together we make up one pretty good person when it comes to pastoring. Now, I share that with you because I think most folks can identify with it, but that's how we motivate and we work together. There are folks here that have the gift of mercy and the gift of prophecy. And when we understand somebody else's gift and we let them do the things that they do and motivated to do, and then we do the things that we're motivated to do, all of a sudden we begin to work in harmony. And that can be in a marriage, that can be in a family, that can be in any place you are. When you start, if you look at your spouse, and the place best is evaluate you and your spouse as what your spiritual gift is, and you may find the reason why you differ over finances. Why you differ over certain things. And when you do that, it can bring harmony, because understanding the differences is a great way of accomplishing harmony. So basically, the facts about the unity of the church, all the gifts work in harmony. Second of all, being only a spectator disrupts harmony. God never called any of us to sit there and be a spectator. That's why when we had our Volunteer Sunday, and we were so proud that we were going to give out gift cards to every person involved in ministry, and we ended up giving out gift cards to everybody that was here, simply because of the fact everybody involves in ministry. So I compliment our church. But here's the thing. Being a spectator only disrupts harmony, because while we're all working our gifts together, and we're struggling through relationship because we don't see things eye to eye, and there's that one or two people that just don't want to be involved, but they seem to always have an opinion, they disrupt harmony because they're not exercising something within the body. So learn your gift. Get involved in ministry so that you can be part of what we're doing, because if you're only a spectator, it's going to disrupt the harmony. I have found that after pastoring all these years, that people, it's interesting that I've seen people come and go in churches, and sometimes that's fine. God leads other folks to other places. But I've noticed that by the time that somebody is ready to leave a church, and they leave, I've never found too much of a vacuum. Because by the time they're leaving, they weren't doing anything. Which tells me they were spectating, and that's why they weren't happy. Because the happiest people in church ministries are people that are using their gifts and talents and abilities to carry out the ministry, and they're excited to do it. There's ups and downs, but they're excited because they're motivated to do something. So being a spectator disrupts the harmony. Third of all, we all have the role to make the church a success. We all have a role. This church, like any other church, is not successful because of the pastors. Just the leadership is successful because each and every person is involved in ministry at some capacity and some level. Some are in leadership, but also it takes everybody working together to make any organization work, and the church is included in that. And the last thing I want to share with you about this whole thing, facts about unity of the gifts in the church, is that don't judge others who don't have your gift. This is what we're going to learn over the next 7 weeks. And this introduction is a lot of information I'm giving to you. But here's the thing. I have found when I've sat down with people that have personality conflicts with one another in church that it really wasn't personality conflict. It was the fact that they differed in their gifts. I've had members of churches come to me and get on my case and say, listen, Pastor, you need to preach more about sin. I mean, you need to name it. And I'll say, okay, do you got anybody in particularly in mind you want me to talk about? I jokingly say, because apparently they do. And I said, but see, I think sin is sin, and there's sin in the world. But I've never been one to have that scare tactic. I've always been one to motivate to more positive things. That's my gift. If you want to hear somebody that will be fire and brimstone because your gift's a prophecy and you're needing that, then find a pastor that will do that. But that's not how God made me. And I think they're all necessary. There are people out there, pastors out there that need to do that, but that's not what God called me to do. You know, I've had people come to me and say, you know, I'll have somebody that's involved in leadership ministry, and I'll say, listen, it's time for you to move aside. I mean, you're not following through. You're not motivated. You're not excited. The one thing about our leadership team is one of the three E's we give them is you need to have excitement. And I don't see the excitement. You know, I may tolerate for a long time, but I get frustrated because I'm like, listen, we're in a great work we're doing. This is a fun thing that we're doing. This is important what we're doing. And you need to get excited. And I may say to somebody, listen, I'm going to remove you from this area because you don't have the energy. You don't have the enthusiasm. You're just going through the motions. And somebody with a gift of mercy will come to me and says, I heard that you told so-and-so they can't lead that ministry, and I feel so bad for them. And I think you're hurting them because they really wanted to do it, but, you know, and I'm like, okay. Somebody to get the privacy, and I'm glad, man. I was about done with them. See, our perspectives are based upon our gifts. Now, together, we work well together. But that's how we view many times, how we differ. And so don't judge somebody because they're not as hardline as you. Don't judge somebody because they're not as merciful as you. If you have the gift of service, don't get mad because folks don't show up. We try to get folks here to set up and stuff. And you say, I come here, I just want to serve God and the things I can do. I wonder why everybody else doesn't show up too. Not everybody's geared up the same way you are. But if they all are allowed to do what they do, to teach the teach, to lead, to organize, to help with finances, to help with these things, the church will run more effectively because we all have different gifts. And let me give you the walk away. Talents and abilities are what you're capable of. Your gift is what motivates you to perform and succeed. Now, I gave you a lot of information. I may have lost some of you here. You can re-listen to this if you want to. I will say this, if you have questions about any of this, contact me during the week because I want to make sure you have clarity before we get to the first gift of prophecy next week. But let me kind of wrap it all up here to make sure you understand this whole idea of spiritual gifts, motivational gifts, grace gifts, is in a church body, and say we have 100 people involved in Cornerstone, we all will come in with a perspective of what we want. And that perspective is based upon our gifts. And the best way I can close this out to give you an idea is this. Say, for instance, there was a vacancy in the pastor of Cornerstone Church. I'm not going anywhere. My wife won't let me retire for a few more years. We talked. And the other night we had dinner with the chief of police in Enfield, Carl Sperazza, and he's retiring next month. And I'm 2 months younger than him. And I told my wife, he's retiring. She goes, no, you can't. But say there's a vacancy, and all of a sudden the trustees are bringing in candidates to be able to take over as pastor. Obviously, my assumption is be that Pastor Tony obviously will follow me, but say he's not on the scene right now, you know, Sarah basically booting him out or something, okay? Bless you. But say, for instance, you're going to interview a new pastor, and that pastor is up here taking Q&A from you. You're going to ask questions based upon your dominant spiritual gift. So if you're a person that has the gift of prophecy, and you're going to say, Pastor so-and-so, when you become our pastor, will you speak more firmly about correction action? Would you be more pointed when it comes to right and wrong? Our last pastor was kind of wishy-washy about this. He just always wanted to motivate everybody. That may be the way you approach. I want somebody who's going to make me feel a little bit of conviction before I leave. They may be the person that's kind of hard on themselves. Person with the gift of service says, Pastor so-and-so, are you willing to get here? And our last pastor didn't show up and set up. Although, I want to make sure it's clear, I have offered, but I've been told by a lot of folks, your pastor, your job is not to come and set up, it's to come speak. But I'm willing to. But we want a pastor that's willing to take a mop and do some of the work around here, because if we're going to serve, that person needs to serve us too. What do you think about, you know, washing feet, you know, that kind of thing, you know? I want somebody who's going to serve, and our pastor was basically more of a figurehead. I want somebody to be more in the trenches with us. That's how they may ask the question. Somebody with the gift of teaching would say, Pastor so-and-so, our last pastor, you know, when he spoke, he shared a couple of scriptures, but I'm really hungry for, I want to hear more teaching, systematic teaching, and I want outlines given to me. I want things I can write down. I want to learn systematically. And I can tell you, my wife has a little bit of this, because she's got on me many times, so you need to share more scripture. And I always said, then you start speaking. But you know, that may be the approach, is I want a pastor who's going to be more of a teacher, that's going to give us, I want to get into the deepness of the word. Somebody to get the exhortation was saying, I want a pastor who's simply going to motivate me, and I want somebody who's positive, somebody who is humorous, somebody who has a lot of energy that really wants to motivate people, and it just has this way of when they're done speaking, is going to make folks want to go out and charge hell with a squirt gun. I want to get some stuff done. Somebody to get their giving is, Pastor, I want to know that you're going to handle our finances well, and I want to know you're not going to waste time and our time and stuff. And so what is your daily routine? What time do you get up in the morning? Do you have devotions? Do you have this here? They want to know that you're using your time correctly. Somebody with rule and organization, they're going to say to the new pastor, Pastor so-and-so, we want somebody who basically is going to lead all the areas of our church. We want somebody who's going to organize us into an army for God. And we want somebody that we're going to see results and tangible results written down. And somebody to get to mercy and says, Pastor so-and-so, our last pastor, he was a nice guy and compassionate when he needed to be, but he really wasn't given the gift of mercy. He wasn't big on visiting the hospitals and the caring for those in need and stuff. And that's not always true, but once again, it's not my strong suit. And so we want somebody who basically has spent more time sitting with people and just feeling their pain and stuff and that. And so what's happened is that if you are drawing in to have a new pastor, how you interview that pastor is going to be a lot of based upon your strong gift, what you want. And some of the people you listen to outside of church, some of the preachers, whether it be a Charles Stanley, Ann Lee Stanley, whether it be a K. Arthur or some of these great teachers, you identify with who you listen to based upon your gift. I've never been one to listen to a preacher that was very, you know, hellfire and brimstone. I love listening to an Andy Stanley, a Charles Stanley, because they both have the exact same gift I have. And so I identify when they speak. They're motivational speakers with a spiritual attachment. That's probably what I am. And so what happens is your gift motivates you for who you want to lead you. That's why not everybody belongs at Cornerstone. That's why everybody doesn't belong at every church, because we identify with the person that's leading us based a lot of it by our gift. And that's why in our church here we have probably more people that are more gifted towards service, more gifted towards exhortation, organization, and probably not as much prophecy and probably not as mercy. And that's just my opinion, because based on that, people identify with the speaker. And so those are the things I wanted to give you this first week. This is a teaching series. We're not going to have a big time for invitation and stuff, but here's the thing I want you to get. I want you, and this is the reason why we call this Motivated to Succeed. Everybody here has a clean slate. This is the first of the year. Everybody here, 2017, I don't care how it went, it's gone. And no one cares. So you have a new year, a new chapter. This is the first Sunday of 2018. And you have talents and abilities. But I really think it's important that you understand what your dominant gift is. Because by understanding your gift, and then by understanding who somebody else's gift, even if it's your spouse, you may find more tolerance for that person than before and find yourself being more effective. But you're also going to find out what drives you. And here's the fun part of it. You're also not going to try to do stuff that you're not gifted to do. You're not gifted to do. To me, that is the most liberating thing. When I started ministry, and I'll close with this, is I was taught to be everything to everybody. I had to be the church financier. I had to be the organizational guy. I had to be the... Everybody expected the pastor to do everything. And then I was drawn around when somebody said, Pastor, you need to preach more harder. And then somebody, once I did that, would say, Pastor, you've been preaching kind of hard. You need to take it easy. You're scaring people. You need to preach a little more mercy. And I was going crazy trying to be everything everybody wanted me to be. Until I came across a study about 25 years ago by another pastor. And I started studying this. Probably one of the most extensive studies I've ever done. And I finally relaxed and says, I'm not that. I'm me. And this is how I minister. And this is how I speak. I'm never going to be the person that gives an outline for people to write everything down. I'm going to be the person that gives you the more storytelling. I try to bring a picture in your mind, not just information in your head. That's the difference between me and a gift of teaching. I'm not trying to give you 10 things to remember. I'm trying to give you one thing to have a vision for. And if I can do that, then I will have felt like I've accomplished what I'm called to do. That's what motivates me. In fact, what motivates me is when I speak and somebody walks out and says, man, I never saw it that way before. Yesterday, I conducted the funeral for a person. I've had a couple of funerals the last few weeks to conduct. And someone said, I've never seen somebody actually take a biblical story and connect it to all that's going on in the family's emotions. I read two verses, but I told the story. Because to me, I would rather have them envision a story in their head than 10 things to remember. Because I guarantee you, they will walk out of there thinking about that one thing that culminated in this story, that one principle that culminated in that story. And so that's how I'm made up, and I'm hoping to share these with you the rest of the next 6 weeks. So just bow your heads for just a moment. I want to just pray for you and pray for our church. And just the fact of the matter is I gave a lot of information. You know, I have these little cue cards here on the stage that I use. Usually I'll have one or two. I got six because I had a lot of information. But I did this because I needed to get this stuff out, because you will find over the next 6 weeks how I'll be coming back to some of these topics. I'll be rehearsing these in your head. And my goal is in 7 weeks that you will be able to sit back and say, you know what? I believe that my dominant gift is this. There are gift surveys that we could even have you take. We've done this before. But before we get into any of that, I've always tried to get folks to figure it out just through teaching. So my prayer is that over the next 7 weeks is that when we're all done, you will be able to say, I have the gift of service. This is what motivates me. I have the gift of prophecy. And we're going to teach you how to use it under the Spirit, but also teach you how to avoid, because if you have the gift of prophecy and you're not a spiritual acting person, you can be overly judgmental, critical, and condemning. I've seen Christians become very condemning because they have this gift of prophecy where they want to correct all the wrongs, but they're harsh in how they do it. God never meant for us to take any of these gifts and use them as a battling tool against one another. And so we're going to learn these. We're going to learn the vulnerabilities of each one. And we're going to learn how they perceive life. And then when it's all said and done, you'll be able to say, here's my talent. Here's my ability. This is what I'm able to do. And then you're going to have a gift. You're going to be able to say, this is what motivates me to do it. I really want to serve others. I really want to teach. I want to lead. I want to encourage people. I want to show mercy. I want to be that person in our church that is called upon to really help come alongside somebody when they're hurting and have just the right words to say to them. That's a gift of mercy. That's a gift of mercy. Father, we thank you so much for this day. We pray, Lord, that you just bless our afternoon. We thank you for the scriptures that we can learn from, and I pray that all this will come clear over the next few weeks. We ask in the Lord's name, amen.
For the message this morning. So each and every week, make sure as you come in, you grab a bulletin, so that way you have the happenings, the things we have going here at Cornerstone. I look through the bulletin, it's talking about the website and a lot of different things, ways to get involved at Cornerstone. And so